in my book, I talk about a confrontation I had with an older woman after I had very carelessly said the words, "Oh, age is just an illusion." And I had gotten several really angry emails from older women. And one of them said to me, "It's not an illusion for me. I have to work until I'm 80. I'm taking care of my sick partner. I have health issues myself. Figuring out how and where I'm going to live is a daily issue, made worse because of age discrimination." And she said, "It's not an illusion. It's real." And that really hit me. That really hit me hard.
Meet Lynn Slater, writer, activist, fashion icon, and my guest for this episode of Lives of Tomorrow. Today, we're talking about age and exploring the future of aging. Lynn embodies the idea that being old is just like any new beginning in your life and can be the best and most invigorating of all of life's phases, full of rebellion and reinvention, connection and creativity. She's got a brand new book coming out the 12th of March called How to Be Old. I'm Carla Bazzacchi, CEO of WGSN, the world's largest trend forecasting company, and you're listening to Lives of Tomorrow, the WGSN podcast about how we'll all live our lives in the future. Before we find out about the future of aging, Lynn, please can you introduce yourself to our listeners?
My name is Lynn Slater. I am a writer, a activist, a social worker, a former professor, a mother, a grandmother, a daughter, a sister, a friend, and also formerly known as the accidental icon.
Amazing. Now, there are going to be many people listening to this who know you from that world. And I guess today I'm really interested to obviously talk about the book, which is very exciting. This is a podcast about how the world is changing and what the future looks like. So getting your opinion, your forecasts on that. But we will delve a little bit into that, I guess, previous life. You've had a number of different iterations, different careers in your time, but we'll definitely talk about that a little bit. But let's get into the book because it's coming out imminently, How to Be Old. So let's start with that as a question. How are we going to be old in the future?
Well, I think that it's an interesting journey. And I think that my book, which is following me for the last 10 years of my life, the decade between 60 and 70, really kind of shows all the possibilities of how we might live older life, but also some of the challenges and pitfalls.
So do you think we've got it all wrong at the moment? Or do you think that there are individuals, societies, cultures that we can learn from?
Well, I think we are getting it a bit wrong because unfortunately, we're in a moment in history where we feel that we must polarize everything. And so I feel like we're doing that with aging.
How is society better going to support an aging population? Do you have the answer to that?
You've got generations pressing against each other, right? A lot of younger people are going to live with their parents. A lot of parents are still supporting younger people. I can't tell you how many friends I have who are paying for medical insurance for their kids who are in creative industries that don't have healthcare. So I think, again, this idea of rather than looking at what do we need across a lifespan to promote healthy living and adequately supported living, no matter what age you are, is how we need to be thinking about it. And that means that we would have to stop thinking about healthcare as curing disease and really focusing more on prevention. And even when you are older, if you change certain behaviors and lifestyles, you can mitigate chronic disease. It's not an equal sign, right? Our brains can change no matter how old we are. And so I think this notion that, oh, we have this aging population and it's going to, like they call it, a tsunami.
So just imagine for the moment that, I don't know, you're on the subway or something like that, and you see someone with a copy of your book in their hands, which hopefully will happen at some stage in the not too distant future, what kind of measure of success would you like them to come away with having read it?
Well, I would like them, because it really is a cautionary tale, right? At the end of the day, it's really about social media, I think, and how for me, initially, it was a very democratic experience for me, because I was entering into fashion, which had a lot of gatekeeping. And thanks to bloggers and social media folks, they sort of pushed the door open a crack and I barged in and was able to use it in the early years, I think productively, to change some of the misconceptions that people had about older life. I think as time went by, and that narrative got taken over by the media and became about my age specifically, that it began to dilute some of that transgressive power. And it began to be something that felt oppressive to me, not democratic. It was something, you know, I began to be put into categories like senior influencer and Instagramma. And I'm very rebellious. I have never accepted the role that society wants me to play. So that was also instrumental in why I quit.
So I, back in the day, before I ran a Trendfield casting company, I worked in fashion magazines, but not print. So I started out in digital. And when I started out, you know, the magazine editors didn't care that they had websites. In fact, I don't think they even really knew that we existed. We were definitely the kind of lowest of the low. And I saw that evolvement. So print waking up to the power of digital, and then all these esteemed fashion editors kind of getting jostled out of way by the bloggers, and the bloggers came next. And they were a real breath of fresh air, because they weren't curtailed by the advertisers that might be advertising or not advertising in that magazine or later on those websites. And they could sort of say what they wanted because they weren't courted by the fashion brands at that stage. And then you saw that change, and they did become courted, and they wanted their front row seats. So suddenly they couldn't write exactly what they thought. So everything that had made them unique, they became then just like the print editors. And then the influencers came along, and they were sort of the new bloggers, because they weren't being given anything at that stage. They were just styling what they had in their closets, wardrobes. And then the influencers became the next version of that and courted. And so at every stage, the kind of authenticity, which had been the unique, I guess the USP, right, of this new iteration of fashion audience and the conduit between brands to consumers. And it gets polluted, I guess, because it's the next big thing. Is that sort of what it felt like for you?
That's exactly what it felt like. And I kind of started at the tail end of blogging, when it really was about writing, good writing. Like some of the best bloggers, like Susie Lau, they were great fashion journalists, as well as having personal style. And so really, that was primarily why I started my blog, was to write and to use it as an opportunity to research sort of fashion and clothes and more of the sociological aspects of clothes was what I was interested in, and power and things like that. And so over time, right, you just described sort of the flow of my book and what happened to me as being in that system over time.
Is the reader, listener, audience still interested and excited by that medium? And that point about newsletters as a new way of a writer communicating with an audience, there is, again, it's a very direct line to, they don't have to go through any filters. I think they will go the way of everything else if they just become pure advertising. And if the good voices then get, again, I'm kind of, I don't want to use sort of really negative words, but if it just becomes about, here's a freebie that I'm wearing, rather than I have great style or I have great eye for things, or I can genuinely recommend things that you are going to benefit from as well. Those are the writers I connect with, people who I actually begin to trust. And I think that trust can get broken if you feel that it's not authentic.
Exactly. And I think I'm having a little bit of hope because one of the things I'm finding as I'm doing interviews and talking about the book and articles are being put out is that people are in a serious mood right now for good reason. And I find that more people are interested in the second half of my book, the part about how I was being impacted by influencing and social media and how I decided to leave. And so initially, a lot of people thought, oh, everybody's going to be interested in the beginning when she was a famous influencer and model. But I'm finding that my story is resonating more from this later perspective. And I've actually been meeting a lot of younger influencers, very young influencers who were quite successful, who have also left for mental health reasons. And so I think influencing is in flux right now. And I feel like in this time where we're dealing with so many serious things that it's sort of like, oh, big deal, she was an influencer. You know, who cares? We've known it for a long time, the harm that some of this can do to mental health and young people. And I think I learned that it does harm to older people. Because in my book, I talk about a confrontation I had with an older woman after I had very carelessly said the words, oh, age is just an illusion. And I had gotten several really angry emails from older women. And one of them said to me, it's not an illusion for me. I have to work until I'm 80. I'm taking care of my sick partner. I have health issues myself. Figuring out how and where I'm going to live is a daily issue, made worse because of age discrimination. And she said, it's not an illusion. It's real. And that really hit me. That really hit me hard. So I think that even in a recent article about me, like just 2 weeks ago, women were making comments, and this article was focusing on the influencer style part. And women were making comments like, well, I admire you, but with a body like mine, I could never do that. So it's not just young people who are comparing. And that's the danger of these very perfect older people, because real people are comparing.
Yeah, it is interesting because I think if you looked at your world from the outside, even now, and obviously there are lots of thought pieces and reviews of the book that, yes, there is the, you had this, what it appears to be a kind of gilded existence and it looks very glamorous. And then you've shunned that, but you're an example because you were putting yourself out there at a certain age. But you're so right. I hadn't thought about these things until I read the book, and you do very eloquently put it that way. So yeah, there's quite a lot to unpack there. Can we just talk a little bit about representation of people of a certain age, I guess, in society, but also in the media, coming back to some of the topics we've talked about. So in the UK, where I am, apparently, we've done our research here, but only 1% of ads depict women over 50, and 89% of women feel ads do not accurately represent them. I was quite shocked by that stat. Only 1% of women over 50. That's crazy, when those are the people with the money. They're the people who are making buying decisions for their families, and not just young families, but older parents that they might be looking after as well. How do we change that?
I often get asked to do, in fashion magazines, 50 plus style interviews. And I did one recently and I said two things, because you know, the women not seeing themselves makes them feel bad. And I sort of have come to the conclusion that fashion is not going to be a place where they're going to do a good job with aging. The reason why, because it's really at its best, and now it's very commodified, but when it was at its best, it is about aspiration, it's about newness, it's about innovation. And it should be an inspiration to us, not a dictate. And so I think if you sort of look at runway shows and stop looking at the woman who is wearing the clothes, but look at the individual garments, that you can't tell me that if you watched every Milan fashion runway show, that regardless of what size, shape, or whatever you were, that you could not find one garment that would be fabulous on you if you don't look at who's wearing it, right?
Yep.
And you think about fashion from the inside out, from yourself out. And I think the other thing too is that as women, our bodies have changed throughout our lifetime. When we're becoming an adolescent, when we're getting married, and we decide to get pregnant and have a child, and we're losing weight, and we're gaining weight, and we have menopause, we have always had to grapple with the question, as women, how do I dress a changing body? That is the question as an older woman. It's no different. And I think we make it appear that, oh, how am I going to find a personal style as an older woman? Do you know how many 20-year-olds are trying to find a personal style? It has nothing to do with age. And if you take yourself away from it and think about clothes as a material to express who you are and what you wish to convey to the world, then you're not looking outside yourself and you're not comparing. And so that's my advice, because fashion will always, I think, be for the young. It always has been. And I think for me, it's more, I distinguish between fashion and clothing.
I was just about to say that you have made a quite clear distinction. Fashion is one thing. And personal style, or how you dress yourself. How you dress yourself is something totally different. We're just going to jump, because I always do some reoccurring questions so people get to know you in a slightly different way. And then we're going to come back to this very important topic, because we're just getting into the gritty stuff. So just quick answers, first thing that comes into your head. When are you happy?
When I am writing, when I am in my garden, when I am playing with my grandson, when I am helping my daughter, when I am having an adventure with my partner.
Perfect. What is your go-to dish when cooking?
I don't do the cooking. We don't do gender roles in my house.
Even better. Okay, what's the favorite thing that your partner cooks that you love?
He makes the most delicious miso soup.
Excellent. Okay. However big or small, what's your one day-to-day life hack that you couldn't live without?
Coffee. I love my cup of coffee in the morning. I can't start my day without it.
What was the last book you read and really had to recommend?
Real Estate by Deborah Levy.
Okay, right, I'm going to add that to this. I just have that in there because I love reading. Okay, so in that vein, let's get back to the topic in hand. Now, we asked you before we started the podcast, what were your predictions, your big predictions for the future of aging? So can you divulge them and let's debate them?
I think where we live as older people is going to be very different. That in my parents' generation, and even with some members of mine, this notion of living in a segregated community with just other older people was sort of what you were expected to do. I think that they are now unaffordable for a lot of older people. But I think more and more older people want to remain in their own communities. So there needs to be opportunities for them to find ways to remain in their community and have their community provide support in that. And there's a number of really innovative solutions to that. And again, I'm always going to keep going back to intergenerational. So co-housing is one innovation I love, whether that be providing housing across generations with shared space, with shared opportunity to barter. I'll watch your child if you do my grocery shopping. I think there's actually a place in London, it's co-housing with a group of older women. You know, older women live longer, generally speaking. They have less money, generally speaking, and co-housing, right, where you're sharing resources, but you still have your own privacy, I think is a wonderful solution. So I think how we live and where we live is going to be a really big thing in the future. And there's a lot of people still trying to hold on to that segregated living idea, but I see that changing.
But it's interesting, isn't it? Because you talk about this as an innovation, but in decades gone past, people lived together. You didn't move out. You had a community around you, which made raising children was easier because you had that support. You had people growing produce. And I'm fascinated about how we live our lives. Again, you'd hope I was doing my job. But even in terms of where people live, we think about global warming and all of those things. But this idea of intergenerational living, I can see so many advantages to it.
So you just made the point. These have been old ways of living. After industrialization, it's been hard to execute them. But you can go back and take the major premises of it. And then using what we know now and technology and other things, you can make it work in today's world. And so there's lots of ways now that you could design a space that would afford privacy and give you the choice to interact or not, but in a way where resources could be shared.
I've got a really big question for you now. What does it mean to be old today?
We have all the ages that we've ever been inside of us. And so I might be 70, but I can hear a song that makes me feel like I'm 25, because that was the song I was dancing to when I was 25. And so there's a big difference between how you experience your age internally, which is kind of, as I said, all these different, it's very flexible. It can go back and forth. And then what is actually happening to your body. And I think that as I did watch my mother pass away in the last year of her life, and you see a body that starts to lose function after function after function after function. And I would say now, looking back, that my mother died when she was 95. I would say my mother became old when she was 94, because that is when I saw her body. Her brain was going, her physical body was going. It was sort of like you could see one thing and another and another and another going until the moment of her death. And that really profoundly changed me in my thinking about what it means to be old. And this is just a simple example, but I always loved running. And I just, when I hit that moment where you are just so free and the wind is blowing your hair and you're really pumping.
And the endorphins are running through your body and it feels like you could run forever. Yeah, that's a special feeling.
Such a great moment, but my knees are going to hell. But I decided to start cycling. And I have to tell you, when I'm going downhill, I'm having that same feeling. The air feels the same. My body feels the same. I have the endorphins happening. So I think that's really where we have to do it, is at that place where we can creatively address that challenge in a way that allows you to still do what you would like and be who you would like as your body begins to change.
Lynn, this conversation, I don't think it's quite what I was expecting. And I think the perception, you've said it already with the conversations you're having around this book, there is a perception that you have just, you're a badass. You know, age, it doesn't matter. You'll dress the way you want. You'll live the way you want. You'll make decisions that suit you, whether that's, you know, leaving the influencer world or whatever that may be. But it's really thought-provoking in a we are going to have to acknowledge what happens to our bodies, and we are going to have to take responsibility for that, and we are going to have to live with it. Okay, so Lynn, are you more anxious or hopeful about the future of aging?
I think I'm hopeful for this reason, because I follow a lot of young women writers, feminists, and they're really, really writing brutally honestly about things like motherhood, divorce, decisions about not wanting to have a child, just really, really blowing it up. And I feel like older women should be doing that. And we should be inviting young women to ask us those hard questions. I was doing an interview the other day with a younger woman who I think she's taking on her fear of being old. And she asked me, do you think about dying a lot? Which is a very scary question for someone in their 30s to ask, right? And so I think the honest answer is, of course it enters my mind. There might be a night where I wake up with a sense of foreboding. But what it does 90% of the time is make me just be in the moment and live my life to the fullest that I can.
Wow. I can't have that last thing that we talked about was whether you think about dying.
Well, guess what? That's why everyone's afraid of it. That's the core of why people don't want to dive into what real aging is. And I think like anything else that you fear, right? If you really dive into it, you find out at the end of that exploration, okay, this is a realistic fear, but there's probably 75% of it that are unrealistic fears, right? And at the end of it, you can end up at a much calmer and less anxious place.
Okay, that's a much better place to end. Lynn, thank you so much. This has been really, really interesting. I think there's a lot of food for thought, and I hope different to some of the other interviews you're doing. I mean, you can't fail to be seduced by your kind of vision to the world and the fact that you did disrupt that influencer industry and you did pave the way for others, but it also, you know, inspired by the fact that you made the decision when you wanted to leave that world and reinvent yourself yet again as an author. And I'm sure the book will do brilliantly. I think that there's a lot in there for people to get into. And even if they come in because they followed you on Instagram and loved your outfits, and there's a side to that, there's a lot more in there that will make people think about big societal issues and the way that we deal with them. So thank you so much. It's been a really fascinating conversation.
Thank you for having me and asking really great questions.
Thank you to Lynn Slater for joining us on Lives of Tomorrow. Don't forget, Lynn's new book, How to Be Old, is out next week, the 12th of March. Next week's WGSN Create Tomorrow podcast is back with another episode examining the future of product and design. In the meantime, if you want to get in touch with us and give us some feedback or input to the podcast, please send an email to lives@wgsn.com. I'm Carla Bazzacchi, CEO of WGSN. I'll see you next time.